Jesus said, he said, I'm the bread of life. He said, I'm the light of the world. He said, I'm the door. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the resurrection. I'm the way, and I'm the true vine.
This is Straight Talk.
Welcome to Straight Talk Radio. My name is Joshua Halleck. I'm your host. I'm here in the studio today with Pastor Mark Job, author and senior pastor of New Life Community Church. Pastor Mark, today you begin a brand new series called Christ Said I Am. And there's these unique statements of Jesus. Many people think Jesus is just one of many good teachers, a good man, a guy who did good stuff. But when we read his words, we find something unique of him.
You know, Joshua, at the heart of every cult is a misunderstanding of the person of Jesus. And even in popular psychology and popular theology in our world today, many people have misconstrued who Christ is. A lot of people think that he's a great martyr, a sort of a justice leader, a good example for us to follow. But at the heart of who Jesus is, at the heart of who Jesus is, all God, all man, always God, from the beginning, never created, always existent. So if you get wrong who Jesus is, you get Christianity wrong. And so over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be looking at what Jesus says about himself. Christ said, I am. There's seven I am statements found in Scripture. We're going to cover several of those I am statements and get to the core of who is Jesus really.
I love that. There's so many people saying so much about him. Let's see for ourselves. What does Jesus say about who he is? What does he reveal to us? What does he want us to know about him? And what does he want us to do about that? Pastor Mark, thank you for this series. Friends, we're going to start out today in John chapter 8 with Jesus' statement, I am the light of the world.
We're talking about seven statements that Jesus made about himself. We're talking about Jesus, straight up Jesus. Jesus said about himself in the last year that he was alive, he said, I'm the bread of life. He said, I'm the light of the world. He said, I'm the door. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the resurrection. I'm the way, and I'm the true vine. Today we're going to be looking at the statement that Jesus made when he said, I am the light of the world. Now most of us don't know how much we miss the light until the light goes out. A few months ago, we had the blizzard of 2011. One of the greatest blizzards Chicago's had, I believe, in 30 years. And hey, we lived through it. It's right about that time in the middle of the blizzard, in the middle of January and February, that you start thinking, you know, California, Arizona, man, there's a pool there. There's something pulling me there. And how many of you think about that in the middle of the wintertime? Like, whoa, that warm weather sure looks nice. The weatherman gets up and it seems like they're always 70 and we're always 30. Something wrong with that picture. But in the middle of that blizzard, I thought, I knew it was coming. I knew there was going to be snow. I knew where you were going to be. The kids were not going to go to school. I knew that we were going to be snowed in. So I prepared myself mentally. I thought, okay, this will be a day and a half, 2 days. We'll be shut in, not able to get out. We have food in the refrigerator. We have heat in our heating system. And I think we're going to do just fine. And we did. Snow started coming down. We're looking out the window. Wow, it's really piling up. Man, it's about 2 feet now. The kids are like, yeah, we don't have to go to school. I hope it snows all week really bad so we can get off school. And everything was going good. We were settling in to a day and a half or 2 days of being snowed in. And then suddenly it happened. The lights flickered. I said, uh-oh, the lights are flickering. Now, everything was good until the lights started flickering. It was already evening time, and then they went, did-it, did-it, and they went out. Now, suddenly, everything changed. It was no longer, this will be nice and cozy, get a book, read it, the kids will be. Now it's like, we're in the dark. And I don't know if it happens in your house, but in my house, I always know where the flashlight is supposed to be. But when the lights go out, it's never there. Now, I have a 12-year-old. And so I say, Grant, where's the flashlight? Well, Dad, I was exploring the basement, and I don't remember where I left it. So it's never where it's supposed to be. So we're lighting candles, and suddenly the dynamic is changing. Why? Because when we had light, it was a different story. When the light goes out, you start realizing how much you depend on the light. Jesus is talking about, in John chapter 9, what it means to be the light. He compares himself with things that we know and see every day, bread and now light. And I want to begin reading in verse 9 because this is a really powerful passage, and I want to make sure that the Spirit of God is able to speak to your heart clearly and powerfully this morning about what Jesus is saying about himself. It says in verse 1, as Jesus went along, he saw a blind man from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, which means teacher, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Verse 3, neither this man nor his parents sinned, Jesus said, but this happened so that the works of God may be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent us, me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, here it goes, listen, I am the light of the world. So I want to talk to you about what it means that Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And before I can do that, I have to set up this story a little bit, because there's a couple players in this story that you need to really understand. Jesus, if you look at chapter 8 of John, the beginning of chapter 8, Jesus had an encounter with a woman caught in adultery. Do you remember that story? They catch a woman caught in adultery. They drag her in front of Jesus. Of course, the man's nowhere to be found. He ran off, so it's the woman. They're ready to stone her. They have stones in their hands. They're saying, Jesus, what do you say? We want at her. I mean, let's throw these stones. She's terrified for her life as these men gather around with rocks in their hands ready to kill her. And Jesus looks at them and he says, he who is without sin, let him cast the first stone. And then he goes down and starts scribbling in the sand. I just wish I could have a picture, satellite photo of what he was scribbling. The Bible doesn't tell us. Maybe he was writing sins. Pride, lying, presumption. And as people saw their sin listed, maybe they walked away with their head down, dropped their rocks, and walked. I don't know. We don't really know. Maybe he was drawing stick figures. I don't know what he was drawing. I don't really know what he was drawing. But I know that people walked away. And then finally, when everybody had left, Jesus looked at the woman and he said, woman, where are those that condemned you? And she said, Master, they're gone. And he said, go and sin no more. Well, this aggravated the religious people. They were super mad that Jesus was challenging them. And then later on, right around that time, it goes on to tell us that Jesus has this confrontation with the religious leaders, and he calls them children of the devil, and they are super mad at Jesus. And then Jesus says, they say, we're children of Abraham. And Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. And now they're ready to stone Jesus. So they take up rocks, ready to stone Jesus. I mean, these people are all about getting stoned. Stoned, you know, the right kind of stoned way. Have you ever run into people like that? They're always ready to throw stones. Give me a stone. And that person, let's go after that person. First the adulterer woman, now Jesus. So as we enter into chapter 9, there's already this tension building up, because Jesus is claiming to be God, and they understand what he's saying about himself. And there's an anger there. So now he's walking. The Pharisees are watching. There's a blind man by the side of the road. Jesus walks by the blind man, and his disciples ask this kind of dumb question. You know, you look through the Bible and you realize that the disciples are always asking sometimes kind of out of place dumb questions. They see a blind man and they say, "No, Jesus, instead of like, how can we help this guy? Like, Jesus, question here. Now, who sinned? This man was born blind. Is he blind because he sinned? Or is it blind because his parents sinned?" Now, that's a kind of a dumb question on a couple levels. First of all, if he was born blind, how could he have sinned, first of all? How do you sin before you're born? Secondly, why are you even asking that question? Jesus looks at him, and I can kind of see Jesus nodding his head like this, saying, "Why are you asking that question about why he was born blind if this person sinned or his parents sinned? You should be asking, how can we help this person? And how can we offer hope to this person?" He says it's neither he that sinned nor his parents that sinned. As long as, and he goes on to say, look what he says. He says, "But this happens so that the works of God may be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming where no man can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Basically, what Jesus was saying is stop asking why and start asking how can we do the works of our Father in this situation. You know, I run into a lot of Christians, even like disasters that are happening in Japan, or when a disaster hit Haiti. Some Christians got up and they said, "Well, see, look what's happening to Haiti. It's because they're into Buddhism. And so look what God is doing. God is just going to wipe them out because they're into Buddhism." A tragedy happens, and oftentimes we say, "Well, see, because they're doing that." And what did the Japanese do? "Oh, they must have been, there's only 1% Christian. That's why it's here." Let me clarify something. Listen, bad things happen to good people too. In 9/11, when the towers went down, there were people that loved Jesus in there, and they were diehard pagans that didn't love Jesus at all, and they both died. The wrong question to be asking is not why, who sinned so that this is happening. The right question to be asking is this: what does God want me to do about this? You see, when we start judging why someone is in the place they're at, and we start pointing to the sin, "Well, maybe they did this, or maybe they did that, or maybe they did that," then it excuses us from doing anything about their situation because we think they deserve it. But when we start asking ourselves this question, not why did this happen, but what can I do in Jesus' name? What is it that God would want me to do about this? What is the heart of God? That's the question we should be asking, because you and I don't know why things happen all the time.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Job in a moment. You are listening to a Straight Talk message entitled, "I Am the Light of the World," which is from Pastor Mark's new series called CSI, Christ Said, I Am. After the broadcast, I'll tell you more about how you can get a free copy of this message, as well as give you information regarding Pastor Mark's ministry at New Life Community Church in Chicago. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Mark. We're in the book of John, chapter 8. Tonight's Straight Talk is called, "I Am the Light of the World."
I mean, you could walk by a homeless person and you could say, "Well, he's homeless because he's a drug addict and he's a drinker and he probably had a lot of money and just drank it all up anyway, and he lied and cheated. And look at what he's doing now. He's living under a bridge. He deserves that. I'm not going to help him out anyways because he made his bed, now sleep in it." You could go there. Or instead of going there, you could say, "Here's a person. Regardless of how we ended up there, is a person that's in need, that Jesus loves, that God has a heart for. And so whatever hope I can offer and give into his life, that's what I'm going to do." You could talk to a person that's dying of AIDS, and you could say, "Well, you know, they're dying of AIDS because they brought this on themselves, because, you know, who knows who they slept with or who knows what kind of sexual deviation they're into so that they had AIDS." And you could go there and you could walk around them like, "Hey, you deserve that." Or you could say to yourself, hey, I don't know why they're in this situation. I don't know why this happened, but I know that my responsibility is to show the love of Jesus to them, regardless of why they're there or what happened or whose fault it is. I'm going to ask, what does God want me to do there? Do you understand? Because what that does is it frees us up from judgmentalism. And it asks us not, why did this happen, but what does God want me to do about this situation now? And that's the heart of Christ for us. When people walk into this church building, you know, there's a reason that people have issues that they have. But the big question is not, well, you deserve that, or maybe that. No, the big question is, what does God want us to do with people that right now are hurting, struggling, and suffering? What is God's response to them? So the disciples were asking all the wrong questions. They were questions about judgment. And Jesus basically said, those are the wrong questions. You shouldn't be asking that. Really what you should be asking is, what does God want us to do? And then Jesus said, as long as I am in the world, listen, I am the light of the world. And then while the disciples were watching him, Jesus does some extraordinary things. And if you're taking notes, I want you to just jot these things down. Because he shows us how light breaks through darkness. The first thing I want you to notice about Jesus' response to the blind man is that Jesus takes initiative. The initiative comes first from the heart of Jesus. Look at what it says. It says, verse 1, it says, and as he went along, he saw the blind man from birth. In this story, the blind man doesn't say, Jesus, Jesus. In this story, the blind man doesn't reach out. He doesn't call to Jesus. He doesn't pray. He doesn't wave his arms. Another blind man, Bartimaeus, kept saying, Jesus, Jesus. In this story, he doesn't. This blind man is there. We don't even know if this blind man knew that Jesus was there. Jesus initiated. He saw the blind man, and Jesus initiated to reach out to the blind man. Can I tell you something that's really, really important? I know some people say, well, I was really struggling and so forth, and I found God. And I know we say that, and I don't want to sort of knock that statement down, because I know what you mean. But you don't find God. First of all, God was never lost. He was never lost. And it's not like God was up in the heavens distracted by global economy and disasters, and there you are reaching to find God and tapping God on the shoulder, God, please help me, God. And God says, oh, you found me. No. That's not the way it works. Listen, I want you to hear me well. God is always the initiator. It's God who's reaching out to you. It's God who's calling you. When you are hard and far away, when you could care less about God, when your heart wasn't even asking the God questions, it was God that was speaking into your conscience, God that was sending people in your way, God that was speaking to your spirit, God that was sending you signs, God that was letting you go through trouble because he knew that was the only way you would pray to him. It was God that has always been reaching out to you, even when you did not even believe in God or know that he was there. God has always been the initiator. He's the one that reaches out. Listen to me, you can't even respond to God unless, first of all, he calls you. It's the tap of God on your shoulder, the speaking of God into your spirit, the placing of people around you that draws you, and you respond to the call of God. So I want you to know that God is always the initiator. He always reaches out. You're here today because God reached out to you, not because you reached out to God. Secondly, I want you to understand about how God works through, how Jesus works and how God works. Secondly, I want you to see that Jesus has insight into each person's life and story. Jesus saw this blind man, didn't even talk to this blind man, but Jesus knew that he had been blind from birth, and he knew about his parents, and he knew about his life. He said, no, it wasn't his parents that sinned. No, it wasn't he that sinned. Now, he had just met this person. Listen, here's what I want you to understand. Jesus, God has always been involved in your story. God has always known your story. He's always been involved in your story. God has known you, tracked you, and journeyed with you all of your existence. There's not a time in your life that God was not there. Now, there may be times in your life that you were not aware of God. There may be times in your life where you felt far from God, but there is not a moment or time in your history, in your life, that God was not a part of the journey. When you were born, God was there. When you celebrated your first birthday, God was there. When you were a rebellious teenager, God was there. When you were messing up and doing this and that, whatever you were doing, God was there. When you lifted your fist at God and said, I don't believe, God was there. When you denied him and tried to walk away from him, God was there. Listen, there is not a time in your story that God has not been there. So, this is really important that you understand, and I understand. If you understand that God was there always, then anytime you speak into someone's life, you ask yourself this question: how has God been working in their life? How has God already been working in their life? You know, that's how we plant campuses around Chicago. People ask us, well, how do you decide where that you're going to plant the next campus? We don't. We say, God, what are you doing? How are you working? And how can we cooperate with what you're doing? And if we feel like God takes us to a place because he gives us a building or there's people there or a door opens up, then we go there. And we ask ourselves when we go there, God, what have you been doing here? We don't show up and say, whew, thank God we're here. Finally, this place was so dark and now God is here with us. No, 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 no. God has been there. God has been in your family. You say, Pastor, you don't know my family. No, I don't. Oh, if you knew my family, I don't know. I don't know if you'd say God has been there. No, no, no. I know God has been in your family, whether that you can see it or not. God is working there behind the scenes, above the scenes, below the scenes, around the scenes. Listen, God is working there. God is always there. He's always been there. He knows the history. He's part of the journey. And so we have to discover, what has God been doing? When you meet someone for the first time and they say, I don't know anything about God. I hate Christians. I hate religions. I spit on the Bible. You meet someone like that, let me tell you, I start digging because you'll discover that God has been working in their life already. Not a person on the face of this earth that God doesn't love. Not a person on the face of this earth that God is not already working some way or another in their life. So when you meet someone, start asking yourself, what has God been working? I need to figure out how God has been working and let them see that God has already been working in their life. Number three, I love this part. Breakthroughs come in many different ways, so we don't depend on people or formulas. God is not in a box. God can work however he wants to work. Notice what it says in verse 6, after Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Having said this, I love this story when I was in junior high because it involves spitting and dirt. Having said this, he spit. He what? Spit, you know. Jesus spit? Yeah, he spit. On the ground. It doesn't seem real spiritual. It doesn't seem real dignified. But I love that about Jesus. He didn't do it always the same way. You see, we as people like to put formulas on Jesus. We want to say, well, it's got to be done this way. Some blind people Jesus touched. Some blind people Jesus said, you're healed. In this case, he made mud and put it on their eyes. Jesus doesn't always heal the same way.
You have been listening to Pastor Mark Jobe's Straight Talk series, CSI, Christ Said, I Am. And tonight was the first half of his message called, I Am the Light of the World. Join us again tomorrow for the second half. As I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to have a copy of this message, you can download it for free with our Straight Talk app. Just log on to PastorMarkJobe.com. That's PastorMarkJobe, J-O-B-E.com. There you will also find other helpful tools to help you in your walk with God. If you'd prefer to have a CD of the message, just contact our office at 773-585-3300. That's 773-585-3300. CDs are only $5 plus shipping, and Pastor Mark's book, called Unstuck, is also available for just $10 plus shipping. If you're looking for a home church, we invite you to check out one of our 25 New Life locations in and around Chicagoland. Just log on to newlifechicago.org. That's newlifechicago.org. We would love to meet you. Well, that's it for Pastor Mark, our Straight Talk team, and myself for the evening. Thank you so much for listening. Please do join us again as we take on the second half of Pastor Mark's message called I Am the Light of the World. Have a great night, and God bless.